On a Tuesday, welcome into Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
Hello, folks. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arid. Cherry.
Yes, Avi.
Can I tell you a quick story?
Okay, go right ahead.
So, you know, Mondays and Fridays when I'm not doing this show, I'm doing the local news over in the other studio.
Mm-hmm.
And so yesterday, Monday, I was in the studio doing my shift, and mm-hmm. I got a call during a break, so I wasn't, like, live. And I picked it up because it was a local number, and the person on the other end said, Avram? Is this Avram? That's my legal name.
Ooh, that's the government name.
Yeah, that's the
didn't know.
You didn't know that? You didn't know that?
I'm learning new.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I got some secrets. So mm-hmm. I said, Avram, and I said, yes, this is he. And the person said, I'm calling from WHYY, which is a trusted source of local news, and we've noticed that you have not yet re-upped your membership for the. And I said, let me stop you right there.
I'll work here.
I could put you on WHYY live right now if you want. So it was a funny conversation, and I assured the very nice man that I would re-up my membership mm-hmm. for the upcoming year. But, you know, phone banking. That used to be the way you reached people,
yeah,
right? If you wanted their money,
anymore.
If you wanted their vote. And people, of course, still do that. And they still call you while you're at work. But more and more these days, people are getting reached on their phone.
Text messaging.
In a different way. Whether yeah. it's text messaging or one of those apps that you open, right? Instagram, mm-hmm. TikTok.
Social media.
Facebook. Social media. And the kings of social media, the queens of social media are influencers. These are the people who have made social media their bread and butter, and lots of campaigns want to partner with them now to get their messages out there. And of course, these people are also shaping how we get news, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so today on the show, we're going to talk about social media influencers and politics.
Yeah. I mean, I think about how many people I follow on social media just to see what they're talking about
yeah.
and what people are talking about. And that's part of our job.
It's the pulse.
To check in with
yeah.
the pulse. And so today on the show, we want to ask you the question, mm-hmm. like, who do you trust when forming your views on politics? Is it friends? Is it family? Is it news organizations? Does what you see on social media influence that viewpoint? Are you following social media influencers and
yeah.
making decisions based on what they have to say? We would love to hear from you. You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. I'm sure there are people, and mm-hmm. there may be a generational divide here, I'm assuming, on we'll see what people say.
All right. So let's get to a trio of local news stories
yes.
before we get to our big topic today. Cherry, kick us off.
Yes. The Paris Olympics officially concluded Sunday with the closing ceremony. I know. Tee-hee, tee-hee. And the U.S. came in with the highest number of medals overall, 126.
Wow.
And we tied for the largest number of gold medals at 40. And some athletes.
Tied with China.
Yeah, with China. You know, yeah.
Just and give them some credit.
Yeah, give them credit. And some athletes with ties to our local area, they are bringing home the hardware.
That's right.
Yes. And thanks to Billy Penn's Nick Kariuki for doing this reporting. But, you know, Sixer star Joel Embiid, he helped the men's basketball team beat France for the gold.
Yes.
Steph Curry did kill it. But, you know,
he was a big part
yeah.
of it. Yeah.
And on the women's team, which also won gold, North Philly native and Rutgers alum Kalia Copper scored 12 points, including the game-winning point. They beat
She was clutch.
Yes.
She and she didn't even play that much
yeah.
prior to that in the tournament, but they brought her in the big gold medal game,
yep.
and she killed it.
Yeah, other locals on the team included player Harrisburg native Alyssa Thomas and former LaSalle player and assistant coach Cheryl Reeve, who served as the head coach for that team. And one of our local gold medalists was rower Justin Best, by the way.
World's best.
Yes,
now.
I know. Justin went to Unionville High School in Kennett Square and then to Drexel. He won gold in the men's Coxless 4. After the win, he spoke to NBC 10 about being inspired by Jason Kelce's Super Bowl parade speech back from 2018. Let's hear a bit of what Kelce and then Justin's reaction to that.
We're a bunch of underdogs. And you know what underdogs is? It's a hungry dog. Hungry dogs run faster. And that's this team. Bottom line is, we wanted it more.
You know, I had my girlfriend on my shoulder when he was giving that speech, and I'm just like, I'm excited. So, you know, all these years later, bringing that mentality, you know, that I wish I had a dog mask because I'd put that on. So, go birds.
Yeah,
Justin's fired up.
Go Justin. By the way, Justin Best later got engaged to his girlfriend live on the Today Show. So Justin had a great
That's
Olympics,
the way you do
okay?
Paris. That's
how
way
you do it. That's
and
how you
And of course,
do it.
You can check out all of the local Olympic winners, medalists.
And there are others, yes.
At BillyPenn.com. Mm-hmm. Nick Kariuki has the story, as Cherry mentioned. And now we're geared up. I'm ready for L.A. 2028.
We're planning it now.
I'm planning I might book the plane today. That's how pumped. This morning, I think I turned on my television just in the hollow hope that somehow the Olympics would still be on.
I know.
It's gone.
It was so
it's really
cool.
gone.
It was really
It's
cool.
really gone. Every 4 mm-hmm. years, but that's what makes it special. Mm-hmm. Every 4 years, we also have a presidential election in this country.
Yep.
And the Washington Post had an interesting story today about Democratic nominee Kamala Harris and her evolving position on fracking, which could be an issue here in Pennsylvania, of course, because, you know, there is a lot of fracking in this state. It is a big swing state. Back in 2019, when she was originally running for president, trying to get the Democratic nomination, Harris said, no question about it. I am in favor of banning fracking, anti-fracking position. Then she became vice president. Joe Biden was more favorable to fracking, so her position has since changed. The question is whether or not her past statements on fracking, her anti-fracking statements, will haunt her in Pennsylvania with enough of the electorate to make a difference in a state that we say over and over and over again is so close.
Yeah, and this is a tricky issue for Democrats because, fracking does release methane, which is a greenhouse gas, and there's water contamination issues. And,
absolutely.
Democrats have strong stances on climate and environmental issues. At the same time, this is an industry in Pennsylvania. More than 100,000 people work in the field and many more are profiting. So it's like a balancing act. And in case you wondered where other Pennsylvania Democrats stand, Fetterman, Shapiro and Casey are for environmental regulations on the gas industry, but they do not support banning fracking.
But I will note, so you mentioned Fetterman.
Yeah.
U.S. Senator John Fetterman.
There
at one point in time, right? Mm-hmm. So he had gone through this same evolution where at one point in time, he had said things that were very hostile to the fracking industry. And he softened those as he sought higher office and was successful doing so. So there clearly is a path for Harris to move to sort of the same shift. And we'll see whether people buy it. I also wonder a little bit if you look at polling on fracking.
Mm-hmm. How much do people care?
Right. How much do people care?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so is it their priority issue? Is it their 10th most important issue? But also and it depends on how you phrase the question, but it's not like Pennsylvanians overwhelmingly support fracking. I think the polling, you could at least say that from the polling.
Mm-hmm.
And in some polls, it does seem like more Pennsylvanians oppose it than support it. I think the question is whether the people oppose it than support it.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is whether people who support fracking care more about it or more likely to vote on it because it's connected to their livelihood. Mm-hmm. But it's trickier than you think. It's a trickier issue than you would assume just based on the national people saying, oh, Pennsylvania, fracking state.
Yeah.
You know, you have to support fracking to win in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, so there are going to be people who will be paying attention to the DNC, who will be listening closely as, VP Harris attempts to define herself as a presidential candidate. So we'll be paying attention to that.
Let's go to New Jersey now.
Yeah, we're going to Jersey. There's a big new biopic that has lots of Jersey connections.
Ooh,
I know you like stuff
I'm
like
very
this.
Very excited. About
yes.
This. I'm a little nervous too, but
it's
yes.
It's a biopic that is in the works that would be about Jersey born chef, author, and travel show host, the late and great Anthony Bourdain.
Loved him.
Yeah. Details of how this is going to happen, what the film will be exact, all of that is very thin right now. It's in the very early stages, but sources tell the publication called Deadline that Jersey native Dominic Sessa is being tapped to play Bourdain.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't know Dominic Sessa, by the way, just age 21, young guy, burst onto the scene last year as the co-star of The Holdovers with Paul Giamatti and Dave Einjoin Randolph,
who's from
Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And Sessa was born in Cherry Hill, grew up in Egg Harbor Township, and has just had this meteoric rise over the last year or so, and this would obviously be a huge role. Anthony Bourdain, beloved travel show host, chef, writer. A little surprised that there's already going to be a biopic about him. And, he's someone that I admired a lot, and someone you really admire.
And you just love watching him on the screen. I love watching him eat. Yeah.
And you're always a little worried, though, about the biopic treatment. Like, will it do it justice? Will it sort of, like, sensationalize? Like,
but he's a good actor, by the way.
Dominic
Sessa. And I can see them side by side. They're both tall, slim, similar-shaped faces.
It makes sense.
Yeah. You can squint, and you might be able to see it.
And I really hope it's a great film, because I did really love Anthony Bourdain and his show. We're playing some of his theme music from the show, Parts Unknown, on CNN. CNN also does a lot of politics. We're going to talk politics in the next segment, talking about influencers in politics. Email us, studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. About a week ago, former President Donald Trump sat down for a live one-on-one interview that lasted over an hour. It was a rare level of access. And here's what's even more rare. The person granted that access wasn't a famous journalist like Leslie Stahl or a network anchor like Lester Holt. It was a popular streamer named Aiden Ross. Here he is explaining to former President Trump how live streams work.
So do you know what live streaming is on these platforms?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah.
More or less. It's the new wave.
I'm going to explain it to you, right? Yeah. So I'm going to show you this chat right now. Let me show you this. So this is the live chat. Right. So you already broke the website in 5 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you broke it. The chat wasn't working, but we ended up fixing it. It's just very slow. Everyone in the chat say hello. You guys just put hi in the chat. And yeah. W's mean it's good. W means win.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yep. So they're putting W's and stuff. Yep. W Trump. All right. So... yeah, everyone is just super thrilled.
Oh, you're gonna have big ratings today. I can see it.
Yeah, I want to break a million. I think we could do it.
Oh, good. Oh, you'd do much more.
You think so?
I think so.
All right. So, who is Aiden Ross? Well, if you're over 30 years old and asking that question, that is kind of the point. The 23-year-old is controversial, provocative, and massively popular among young people. And in today's media environment, he has real power. That's why people like Ross are getting big interviews and big invites to places like the White House and the RNC.
And so today we're going to dive into the growing role of social media influencers in politics, both as campaign assets and purveyors of news. And joining us for this conversation, we have Dr. Heather Lamar, chair of the Department of Communication and Social Influence at the Klein College of Media and Communication at Temple University. Heather, welcome.
Thank
to
you for
Studio
having
2.
Me.
We also have Corey Aversa, Philly publicist and content creator who is set to head to the DNC next week. Welcome, Corey.
Thank you so much.
And we also have Michael Coyle, founder of the social media account Kensington Beach. And you might remember he spoke at the RNC about a month ago. Welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and we would like to hear from you, our listener. Who do you trust when forming your views on politics? Is it friends, family? Is it news organizations? Is it a social media influencer? And does what you see on social media influence your viewpoint? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org.
I want to start very basic, Dr. Heather Lamar, because I brought up this show topic with an older member of my family, I'll say, and I said it was going to be about influencers and politics, and suffice it to say, his question back to me revealed that he has no idea what an influencer is. So when we say that word influencer, who are we describing? What does this universe of people look like?
Well, influencers are just a new term that we use to describe what we used to call public opinion leaders in this space. And I mean, this dates all the way back to, 1920 when the book was first written, talking about the two-step flow of communication. And the way that it actually works is that we've known since the 1920s that in a voting cycle, but really with anything, any kind of brand recognition or anything, people tend to be more influenced by friends and family or who they consider their personal opinion leader on a particular topic than the general media. And that has just translated into the digital age where we have all these great influencers who are speaking to a segmented piece of the population and their audience trusts them as the authority on that issue.
And so go a little bit more into why there is that trust. Like, why would a campaign or why would a political operative want to work with a social media influencer? What are they getting out of that?
Well, from a sociology viewpoint on this, or social and behavioral science viewpoint, what I would say basically is we tend to trust individuals that we know, like, and trust more than just any kind of journalist. That's just generally known to be true. And so what happens is we develop what's called a parasocial relationship. It's a perceived relationship. So mm-hmm. if I follow your show, mm-hmm. which I do, by the way. So great show.
Thank you.
I get to know you. You talk a little bit off the cuff about your life, about your family, your friends, about what you love in Philly. So I get to know you, and that builds to me this perceived relationship. Mm-hmm. And because we have this perceived relationship, we connect in this thing called homophily, which is this like-mindedness. Mm. And so now I feel like I know you. I feel like we have this sort of friendship, even though it's through this digital area, and I understand you. I feel like you think like me, and it becomes a character identification effect. So when you say something, I relate to you. That's much more powerful than me reading an article in the Inquirer.
And social media has really allowed this idea to reach more. I mean, it's the platforms, the reach is larger. Like, what about social media, I guess, amplified this already existing sociological concept?
So I think you have to think, when I talk about social media in the classroom to students, I try to use a metaphor of a river. And if you think of mainstream media as the main channel of, like, the Delaware River mm-hmm. or the Chesapeake even, and then you think of social media as the tributaries.
Mm.
And so I think it's really important to think about it that way, because what's happening in the digital space is that all the tributaries, those are the influencers. Those are the different people that you follow. And that can be anything. Now, they connect back up to the main channel, and that's where you get the cross current of information. I don't know if that's a good metaphor to use for your audience.
It makes sense,
but
yeah.
The idea is people think it's a spider web. It's not a spider web. It's more like a main channel of information flow with all these little tributaries. Some of them go nowhere. Some of them lead back into the main channel. Mm-hmm.
And people with, I guess, millions and millions of followers, tens of thousands of followers, have more influence because they have so many people following, but also more of a tie to the main tributary?
Is that the way? Yes, but also the algorithm picks that up, right? Mm-hmm. So the algorithm is going to – so you have to remember that a lot of these algorithms were trained on how tech makes its money. And tech doesn't make its money in politics. Tech makes its money in advertising.
Right.
So when you're training the algorithm to advertising in audience segmentation, then it's picking up, it's creating what we call a selective exposure effect or a filter bubble. But if you talk about Kamala Harris and you talk about Kamala Harris, and I have trained the algorithm for me on my TikTok that I like Kamala Harris, I might see both of them.
From Mike and Corey.
Yes.
And so, Corey, I want to bring you into the conversation because you're a social media influencer. You're also a publicist working with other social media influencers. I want you to kind of break it down. We understand what the flow of information looks like now. How does this work when you're talking about connecting political campaigns to people who like yourself and those you work with?
Sure. So, you know, I've developed this audience of people in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, South Jersey, Delaware, who, you know, have come to trust me in my content and my opinions. You know, I started working as a creator in this space with our governor, Josh Shapiro, and, you know, was invited to these wonderful opportunities to showcase what's going on in Pennsylvania. And that sort of carried through this year, where I was invited to the White House for Pride Month, also as a leader of Philly Gay Pride Month, not just a creator. And, you know, now I've been going to some of the campaign events and the rallies, and I'm prepping to go to the DNC. And, you know, I think it's an exciting time to be able to cover these events in an authentic way where, you know, my followers are looking for me to experience it just as I see it. You know, if I'm going to a rally, they know on my channels that it's going to be authentic and how I want to, you know, if I was saying that I felt hopeful at events, that's really what I felt.
Through your eyes.
Through my eyes. I guess that's like a great way to say my content is like through my eyes. And that's why I think I've attracted so many followers is, you know, I've been there for a lot of Philadelphia's most viral moments, but they're also through my eyes and through like what I'm seeing. And you know, everyone, I guess my followers really know that, you know, if I'm saying it, that's what I'm feeling. I'm not putting up anything, you know, scripted or that, you know, isn't something that isn't authentic. So.
And let me ask you this follow-up question. Like, you have over 98,000 followers. Like, who follows Corey Aversa?
Sure. Well, with TikTok, too, I have 250,000. And I'd say the two audiences are a little different. I'd say on Instagram, you know, it's a lot of people who want to hear and see what's going on in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and the larger region, you know. And TikTok, I think it's the same, but I think it's a little bit broader. It's people that are also coming to visit Philadelphia, coming to visit Pennsylvania, want to know about this side of the country. And, you know, I think people, I've always had a history of being involved in politics. You know, I came from upstate New York, where I was actually the District 1-1, the oldest one in the country. I was an intern for Mario Cuomo years ago, which is dating myself. Yeah. But, you know, people, it's no surprise to people who followed me for years, dating back to my early days on Twitter, that, you know, I do have opinions. I was very active in showing off, you know, what Hillary and the DNC was doing back at that time. And again, it wasn't just specific opinions, but it was showing what was going on.
So you have always sort of, so the politics thing was always a part of your brand.
Of the brand.
Yes.
Well, let me ask, because you also, but you represent other people in the influencer space, right? As a publicist, is that correct?
Well, I represent clients who then partner with influencers. During a course of a year, it could be up to 900 different influencers on our list.
Okay. So I don't know if these are trade secrets or not, but what I'm really interested in knowing is like how these relationships between like campaigns and influencers are formed and what the conditions are. Like, is there money going back and forth, or is it just access being granted but the influencers pay their way to the DNC or the RNC? Take me inside how these relationships are cemented in what the conditions are between the two parties.
Sure. I mean, I've seen some things on both sides and both parties saying, you know, that people are being paid. Like, I was not paid to go to the DNC. Mm-hmm. I had to pay all of my expenses. Even if someone had come to me and said, you know, to sponsor, say, my hotel, I would have said no.
Why is that? Why would you have said no?
I want to go and not be beholden to anyone. I mean, I think that's why the DNC and the folks that invited me to go. They want me to be authentic and show my perspective. I don't want to have to deal with worrying about any outside interests. Right. I want to show off what I want to show off, and I want to keep doing what I do. And I think on the forefront, and I would assume for both parties, but I can only speak for the Democratic Party and the people that invited me, they want me to go and be me. They don't want me to go and be anybody else. You know, like even different issues, we were asked our different topics that we're interested in, potential speakers we want to talk to. I mean, sure, I can go and talk about some issues that are less familiar to me, but I want to go and talk to people and about issues that are important to me.
Right,
like
right.
A lot of people know me as speaking out for LGBTQ issues, being, you know, the head of Pride Month. So I think, you know, there's no money transacted. And I think they've been really great preparing for the DNC next week to poll us and survey us so that when we get there, we're set up for success.
So in your case, no money. You said sometimes there are relationships where like there could be like paid content and an influencer could be working with a campaign in that way.
I haven't heard of any influencers being paid by any campaigns. I think there's like a year ago I was approached by some outside groups, not a candidate and
Got
not
it.
A party,
Got it.
But to promote, say, voting and getting out the vote.
Got
but
it.
They were not the party and they were not any of the candidates or the elected officials.
Interesting.
So yeah. I have not heard that.
Yeah. And if you are just tuning in, we're talking about the influence of social media influencers on politics. And we have a question for you. Who do you trust when forming your views on politics? Is it friends, family, news organizations, social media? And does what you see on social media influence that viewpoint? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. And I want to bring Mike Coyle into the conversation. You're the founder of Kensington Beach. on Instagram. And also, you had the opportunity to speak at the RNC. I want to start our conversation by asking you, why did you start Kensington Beach, the Instagram page, in the first place?
So Kensington Beach started out, we had a family business there. We actually just sold it about 2 years ago. We were there for over 30 years. So Kensington always been a rough neighborhood, I mean, for decades. So what made me start the page was it just started to get out of control even worse than what it already was. I mean, before you would see addicts on the streets, but most of the time they would come cop their drugs and then they would go back down to the railroad tracks. So you didn't see the people shooting or injecting in their necks out in the public or the needles scattered throughout the neighborhoods. So when I started walking my dog from my job, I would just walk the neighborhood and it became, you know, to where something had to be done. And I figured if I show people what the everyday life is that what we're living here and what we witness every day, I mean, it would have to bring some light to it. So when I got involved with it, it was never for where I'm at today. I was just basically showing people the everyday life, what we live in Kensington.
And then you sort of developed,
yes.
People started following you.
Yes, ma'am. So different media outlets have reached out to me. When I made the front page of the Daily News back in 2018, it kind of took off from there. And what happened was, like, you know, I was reuniting family members. So, you know, some of the things that we show on there, some people, you know, they haven't seen their family members in 5, 7, 10 years. And here I go walking my dog, recording footage of what I'm seeing in the neighborhood, and they see their loved ones. So they would reach out to me.
They DM you.
Yes, yeah. Sir. And I would reconnect loved ones. You know, we would also, people would come from, like, Baltimore as a come check out Kensington to come get high. And they would come, they would go up inside Needle Park, and, you know, they would shoot up, nod out, pockets get ran through, cut open, steal all their money. No way to get home. So we would, you know, we would purchase them a train ticket to get home to Baltimore. Another gentleman down in Arizona, he came here and he got stuck here. And, you know, we buy him plane tickets to get home. But my thing was never to become of this stage. And when it comes to politics, I was never really involved in politics. I still ain't to this day. But I know that in order to make real change where I come from, you have to put your foot in the door. And it doesn't just start with the presidential election as well. It's local. So, you know, the things that have been going on in Kensington, it's been the same story. I mean, I've seen the same blueprint for the last 30 years. If something goes really tragic wrong in Kensington, they show up. If it's election year, they show up. But they just push them around, for instance. You know, but me starting the page basically started off from us having a family-owned business in Kensington and me walking my dog and showing everyday life.
So at what point did you start getting, like, contact from people, like, on the outside in the political world? And what was your reaction to that? Because, like you said, this was not, like, a political project for you. You're documenting life in Kensington.
Correct.
And it just starts blowing up. And at what point do you start hearing from people? And, like, how did you initially deal with that?
So this all started a gentleman by the name of Scott Presler. Mm-hmm. He came to North Philadelphia, and I was doing a cleanup. And he volunteered him and some people to come help me do the cleanup. And when they showed up, it was people from Tennessee, Kentucky, Florida. I mean, there were a lot of people that my neighborhood, you know, we usually don't see these type of people. But they were there. There was no cameras with them. They helped me clean up a whole community. I mean, they didn't ask me to do anything, post anything on social media. They were there with me. And that was the day that I registered for the first time in my life to, you know, I registered as a Republican that day.
And these people were Republicans?
Yes, not all of them, because there was community members out there as well that were just there to clean up the neighborhood. So we kind of came together. It wasn't just Republican or Democrat. It was all of us out there together. And we were cleaning up a community. I mean, we got together. We ate afterwards. You know, so it really touched me and it let me understand, like, you know, maybe I could really make some change in my community. You know, I see these people coming from different states, different places. Maybe I could start, you know, changing the perspective of people who live in my community. So, for instance, I used to always help. You know, I help. If I see one incoherent, someone on the ground, you know, I would either give a fellow addict the Narcan to save their lives and bring them back. But there was always, you know, it was always touching and you're saving a lot of lives, you know, doing what we're doing. So
at what point did – so – how did the whole RNC thing happen? Like how did you get invited? And what was your thought process about whether to do it or not do it?
Well, at first, you know, I definitely thought about it because, like I told you, I'm really not into politics. I thought about it, but I thought it was I thought it would be an amazing opportunity to speak up and be a voice for my community. Because at that stage, at that level, you know, you're speaking to the world at that level. So I knew a lot of people seeing what was going on in Kensington, but nothing was done. I went to Harrisburg. I tried to speak to Governor Wolf at the time when he was in office. I could never get nothing. I've been to the senator's office on Allegheny. I believe her name is Taglione.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to them. I let her know that I get anywhere from 30 to 120 million impressions on Instagram per month.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I tried to reach out to them to help me with things in the neighborhood, nothing. But when it comes to, again, I'm not into the politics, but when it comes to the Republicans, they're helping me get in felons jobs. You know, they're coming into community with me. They're providing Narcan for me to hand out to the addicts to save lives. I mean, I can't turn my back from that.
So did they call you up on the phone? Did they DM you?
Yes, ma'am. It was a process of anything. They I believe they had a few different people that they were interviewing. Excuse me, that they were interviewing, and you know, they decided to pick me to go to the RNC, mm-hmm. And I was kind of honored.
Were you worried, though, that you would alienate some of the people that follow the page? Because, you know, like you said, it wasn't a politics project to start with.
Yes.
And I think every influencer has to make this decision. Do I get into politics and risk dividing the people that follow me?
Well, I mean, it is big because you do want everyone to see it. But me personally, I make zero profit off of what I do. So my message is to get it out there and make change. So, of course, some things some people may not agree with. But at the end of the day, what I'm doing, I know I'm coming from a great place in my heart. You know, like even for instance, like Kensington Beach's mission, it's, you know, it's different than what people think. So we definitely are about the addicts. We definitely want to help the addicts. But our thing is the children of Kensington. They don't get to pick where, you know, the neighborhoods they're born into. They don't get to pick their parents. So our thing is we want to see more opportunity, you know, more educational resources.
Just felt like you could
not
turn down this opportunity.
Yes. You know, we want to see the family unit brought back together. That's big in my neighborhood. I mean, so that's what it was about.
Yeah. And so, Heather, I want to bring you here. You heard Corey's perspective. You heard Mike's perspective. And you think about what are the different campaigns getting when they reach out to a Corey, when they reach out to a Mike? Who's very passionate about their individual communities. What are they getting? And what's the appeal of partnering with folks like this?
Well, I think what they're getting depends on the type of influencer they reach out to. Because what's really interesting to me is probably what some audience members are hearing right now in your audience is somebody who went to the DNC and somebody went to the RNC. But what I'm hearing is you have a content creator and you have a social change maker.
Mm-hmm.
And these are completely different types of influencers. So I think it's very nuanced. And the campaigns themselves have to think strategically about what are we trying to do and who are we partnering with. So if they want to partner with somebody on a policy issue, then they want to go to an influencer that's a social change maker. If they want to partner with somebody that's going to be more of an alternative journalism outlet, then they want to go with a creator.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are different. And I'm not sure that the campaigns themselves have thought that nuanced about strategy, mm-hmm. but that's what they should be doing.
Is there a risk? We have about a minute until the break. Is there a risk because, you know, I might trust Corey or Mike today, but then they might post something tomorrow that makes me go, whoa, I don't want to be associated with that. I mean, what's the risk for campaigns working with people who are really, they're kind of they're the CEOs of their own media empires?
Yeah.
So I think the risk is actually on both sides of the equation.
Mm.
And it's really important to remain authentic. So one of the things that I like to talk about is a shared values framework. And you should take a shared values framework where you look at the influencer, you look at what they care about, you look at whether they have a mission to change or whether they have a passion issue like LGBTQ+. You have to look at what their passion is, not just their audience. You have to look also at what their authentic voice is. And you have to ask yourself as the politician, does my passion and my authentic voice align with that?
Mm-hmm.
And if not, that's very dangerous. If so, then it's green light, go.
So Chuck emails us, influencers, albeit a possible starting point, are under no obligation to report information responsibly. So some skepticism from Chuck. Lou says social media sometimes buttresses information that I've picked up from credible news sources, but there's also some crazy stuff out there. You have to be careful. So keep sending those comments in studio2@whyy.org. We're going to talk a lot more about the role of social media influencers in politics today. Yeah. Stay with us.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We are going to continue our conversation now about the role social media influencers play in politics in this election cycle. Let me reintroduce our guests. We have Dr. Heather Lamar, Chair for the Department of Communication and Social Influence within the Klein College of Media and Communication at Temple. We also have Corey Aversa, Philly publicist and content creator, and Michael Coyle, founder of Kensington Beach. And I wanted to talk about this idea of authenticity, because that does seem where a lot of the power comes from. The idea that this person you have this parasocial relationship with online, you can really trust them because they're really saying what they believe. But then if you partner with a campaign or a candidate or a party, some people might say, just like the way when a celebrity endorses a candidate, they might say, oh, come on, you're just kind of, you're doing this for the relationship. This isn't really you. So Corey Aversa, I mean, how do you maintain authenticity while entering that political sphere?
Sure. So you had asked me earlier about, you know, payment and money and transactions. Yeah. You know, I would say my account, Philly Publicist, for the most part, almost everything we've been doing has not been paid. Like most projects we turned down, like I turned down, I should say, maybe 19 out of 50, 19 out of 20. Yeah. You know, because I want to maintain that authenticity. I don't want people to tell me what to say or how to talk. You know, and I think that's what brings the followers in to be engaged in the conversation. So first and foremost, you know, it's very rare that I do take a payment or sponsorship for anything. But I think any good creator, no matter what your political beliefs are, you know, you need to have ethics. You have to mark that as an advertisement or a partnership if you're getting provided with things. And I think that's important. And I also think it's important to have you really find the authenticity in the dialogue. It's not just what we're posting, but it's what the conversation is underneath the post. It's the back and forth. It's the DMs. It's on, you know, even calling out other creators who aren't being authentic. You know, like I saw a story the other when, you know, the new team was announced and that, you know, Harris Waltz was surging in the polls. And then you read the story and it was like by 0.5%.
Mm.
Well, no, that's not surging in the polls.
Right.
And actually, it was a Democratic leaning outlet, and I called them out and I said, you're making everybody look bad.
Yeah.
You know,
you got in the comments there.
I did get in the comments there because, you know, that's not true. And I will go through and I try to respond to as many comments that are worthwhile, you know, not the hate comments and not the, you know, the little sound bites from either party, but the true authentic comments. And some of that you see under and some of it you see behind the scenes in the DMs. But I think that's also what makes us all authentic, you know?
A quick follow-up question to you, Corey. And this question is also to you, Mike. Has a campaign or any politician ever asked you to change a post or take something down? And if they did, what would be your response?
They haven't so far. You know, I think the only thing I've had is maybe they want to provide more information because they learned that I'm interested in a topic and maybe want to arm me with info in the future. But no one's ever asked me to do that. And I would say it doesn't even matter if it was the candidate, the party, or it could be you walking by me on the sidewalk. If someone pointed out that I had something, you know, let's say factually incorrect.
Yeah.
I'd want to correct it because, again, that brings back authenticity. I want everyone to know. And if I did make a mistake on something, let's say 3 months from now, I go to the DNC tomorrow and in November, I realize I erred on something. I'm going to want to put it up and say, hey, I made a mistake on this. The fact, the figure, whatever I called out, because I think, again,
because once you lose the trust, it's over, right? With the audience.
Right. We want to keep, this isn't a short term game for me, just for this election. It's my whole Philly publicist account. It's keeping that trust moving forward. It's the long game.
Because your reputation is on the line every time you make a post. And I want to bring you and Mike and ask you that question as well. How much control when you were at the RNC? Did you write your own speech? How did that work?
That's what I loved about the RNC. It was, they allowed me to be myself. As you could see, I'm the only person that went there with a t-shirt, jeans, and a hat on. So they definitely allowed me to be myself. They let me be authentic. And like I was mentioning to you earlier, I had got reached out to an individual inside of Philadelphia and asked me would I be interested in speaking at the DNC. And, you know, I thought about it, and I was wondering, like, what was going on here? Like, how I just spoke at the RNC, and now I'm getting a phone call asking me would I speak at the DNC. And the feeling that I was getting, it was more of like I said, no one said it was going to be scripted, but they basically told me that they would be helping me with my speech.
You didn't like that approach?
No, I did not, sir.
And so you chose not to do that. Yeah.
Well, again, this was not from no one at the top of the DNC. This was more of a less of a community, maybe activist in Philadelphia who was involved with the Democratic Party, who asked me if I would be interested. Mm. You know.
Yeah, but the way that they approached you.
Yeah, the way that they
off,
approached me, yes, because the way that the RNC approached me, it was totally different. So when I experienced that, which I never experienced before, and then experienced what I just did a few weeks ago, it was more or less like, hold on, what is the agenda behind this now?
Yeah. You know? I want to play a clip now, and just to give you a sense of how some of these collaborations between influencers and politicians sound and what people are seeing online. So this is makeup and beauty influencer Manny MUA interviewing President Joe Biden. Got an audience with President Joe Biden. So here's a clip from that interaction.
If you were to be stranded on a desert island and you had to bring one product with you, a skincare product that you might really love, what would it be?
I was hoping you'd say if I could bring one person I really love.
one product.
You know, I happen to be Irish, so I think my wife, before I headed to that island, would tell me that you better bring some sunscreen. And I think that's the one product I would bring, is sunscreen.
So it's a nice interaction, and it's a clever answer, I think, Dr. Heather Lamar. And Joe Biden did court influencers and invited them to the White House. And yet we saw his polling numbers with young people not great. So I don't know what that says about the power of influencers. Maybe they're just not a cure-all, or they maybe not as effective as we who don't really understand this world think. I mean, what do you take away from the way, like, the current White House has interacted with influencers?
Well, this has always been true in advertising in general, including and extending that to political marketing, right? So we know celebrity endorsement only works half the time with half the people. We just don't know which half. And that's sort of the old adage with political marketing and advertising in general. And it works the same here. And you have to remember, though, a lot of those entertainment influencers, a lot of gaming streamers, these people, most of their audience is non-voting age.
Right.
And so when they think they're talking to millions of people, well, they're talking to millions of people who may or may not be living in America and of voting age.
Right.
And so really the segment is a lot smaller. The demographic's a lot smaller than they realize. That's part of it. And then we get back to the fact that you have to understand followers of those channels also tend to be non-political or apolitical in general. So the likelihood of President Biden showing up and having somebody say, oh, I kind of like him, he's funny, is very high. The likelihood of that translating to a vote for Joe Biden is very low.
Is the game when partnering with influencers, given who they tend to reach and the age bracket they tend to reach, is it more about turnout than persuasion typically, or is it sort of an equal mix of both, do you think?
About turnout to the vote?
Yeah, like when they go, like we just heard that clip with Manny MUA, like was the idea there to reach people who might not have voted and get them to vote? Or was the idea to take someone who's already going to vote and persuade them that Biden is the candidate for them? Like, which is more the play there?
So this is really, really tricky for campaigns to figure out this strategy, because as we're leading up to the election, it's all about trying to get the non-committed independent voter to come in. So that's where the apolitical audience actually does matter to you. And so this is going to be a persuasion move. This is a play to have somebody like President Biden in that particular clip more and say, oh, I'm going to consider him more heavily. When we get closer to the election, when we get within that, and obviously we're going to have mail-in voting opening soon, when we get inside that window within 30 days, it moves to voter turnout. Mm. But you have to remember something really fundamental about persuasion, and that is that that kind of a prime, I like Joe Biden, really only lasts 15 minutes.
Mm. 15 minutes.
15 minutes is all the prime lasts. Yeah. So from the time that I heard that clip on my way to the voting booth in my earbuds, and then I flipped it over to my favorite song, and I'm listening to Kendrick Lamar, by the time I get there, that's already gone. That is why it has to be repeated
constantly.
And the space is so fragmented that it's almost impossible for them to have the level of repetition they need.
Mm. Yeah. I want to read a couple comments because we asked you, our listeners, sort of who do you trust when it comes to political views? And Harry from Glenside says, I only trust myself. I would never trust some random person on social media to give me political advice or information. Andre says, honestly, I trust my immediate family with my political views. When speaking to others, friends, other family members, colleagues, etc., I just listen and rarely respond. I want to play this clip because this is A.B. Burns Tucker, who goes by I Am Legally Hype on TikTok, talking about the selection of Tim Walz as the Democratic nominee for vice president. And I have a question about this. Go ahead.
Y'all, this just in, Kamala Harris has chosen Governor Tim Walz as her ready mate. Hey, Tim. Now, I ain't gonna hold y'all. Thank God I'm not no better woman, because when I tell you all my dollars was on Shapiro, but honey, we've been like Tim. Let me tell y'all about our boy. So not only is Tim a two-term governor out in Minnesota, and they like him out there, but he also served 12 years in Congress in the House. He is a former geography teacher. He was a coach, and he's a vet. And y'all know how the Republican Party is all up in shambles right now because people out here calling him weird. That was Tim. Tim put that out there.
And so, Corey, I have this question for you and to Mike as well, just sort of your style, because you're going to be covering the DNC. What is your style for getting this information? You just heard I Am Legally Hype. There are people who would probably prefer hearing about Tim Walz from I Am Legally Hype on TikTok, but I just wonder your style for that.
Sure. So my style going into the DNC, you know, without knowing the exact agenda and who we're going to have access to for interviews, is to show it off as it's happening, like the feelings that I'm feeling there, if I'm feeling hopeful, if I'm not feeling hopeful. But also, like, so far as I've approached things from even the rally last week where Walz was introduced, is highlighting the sound bites that along with the feelings, making you feel like you're there with me. And I do agree. Like, I like how she just did that. You know, when I see commercials on TV, it's hard to, like, watch a commercial on TV and go back and fact check it. I think one thing that we haven't said about the creators is everything she just said in there, you could easily pause that, fact check it. Was he a high school teacher? Was he this? Did this actually occur? Mm. And that's what I like about creators. So I hope people will do that for me. If they hear me talking about something, pause my video, fact check me, and then have a dialogue with me. But, you know, I want people to go to the DNC and almost feel like they're with me there, and I want them to ask me questions, and I want them to give me, you know, their opinions and their feelings and their feedback so that I could, you know, really get out the word about what's happening. So
yeah. And Mike, you were at the RNC, you met JD Vance, the VP pick on the Republican side.
Yes, ma'am.
Posted that information on the Kensington Beach page.
Yes, ma'am.
What has been the community reaction as you sort of share your experiences with the campaign?
Oh, I'm getting involved with the politics, like I told you earlier. My thing was with the RNC, I just wanted to get through the speech. But when it comes to it, there is some backlash, you know. But that's the problem nowadays, you know. We need to be able to have a conversation, you know, without it being so extreme. I mean, a lot of it has to do with common sense, in my opinion. And there's not a lot of that going on. So when it comes to Tim, you know, running for vice president and him, my opinion on him, I leave it to the people. I'm speaking for my community. What's going on in my community is not just in my community. It's global. You know, they're using it over in Mexico as deterrences and everything. So when it comes to the politicians, from what I know, it's going to be tricky. Kind of reminds me of the streets. You know, you got to be careful who you deal with, who you watch. You got your in crowd, you got the crowd in the middle, and you got the crowd at the bottom who aren't so popular. So you got to be careful on, you know, we all have opinions, but at the end of the day, I'm looking for change.
Yeah. Let me bring in some more comments. This is JB who says none of the mainstream outlets can be trusted. So perhaps someone who's looking to influencers more. Geraldine from Collingswood says, I trust my own ears and what the candidates say themselves. All of this said, and this is such a fascinating conversation, but I'm bringing it back to you, Heather Lamar. All of this said, you could still turn on your television and see campaigns spending lots of money on traditional television advertising. How, this is a very subjective question, but like, how big a deal are influencers in the political space right now relative to traditional ways of reaching people?
I think that that's a growing percentage. If you had asked me that question 10 years ago, I would have said not enough to make even a 1% difference, so right on the margins. In today's world, as you heard also from the feedback from your own listeners, a lot of people are moving away from mainstream media. I mean, most people don't even watch that anymore, young people in particular. If you're trying, and you have to also remember, we have the highest number, we have more independents in this country now than registered Republicans or Democrats. And that has completely flipped on its head in the last 20 years. So I would say in today's space, with low trust in traditional media, a fragmented media environment, and nobody believes anything they see on advertising, then I think influencers are really becoming more and more important, and you're going to see them to continue to be important. The problem is it's very dicey. You have to be very careful and very authentic when you partner with them, because it's risk for them and risk for you if you're the politician.
And as we get ready to close out, I know we didn't talk about social media news sites, community type news sites, but I want to give some stats. No Gun Zone, that's an Instagram community news site focused on crime and gun violence in Philly, has 352,000 followers. 6ABC, legacy news station, has 333,000 followers, and this is on Instagram. Yeah. Philly Inquirer, 240,000 followers. So if you think about just the number of people who are following some of these online influencers and online news aggregators.
53K for WHYY. Yeah,
I know, by the way.
I got to make sure we come clean on that.
They do a great job running that account. The influence seems to be growing is my point as we wrap up. Yeah.
So that's it for the conversation. And there's so much more we could talk about, and perhaps another time. But let me just thank everyone who participated today. Michael Coyle, founder of Kensington Beach. Thank you, sir, for being here.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Dr. Heather Lamar, chair of the Department of Communication and Social Influence within the Klein College at Temple. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And Corey Aversa, headed to the DNC, Philly publicist and content creator. Corey, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for including me.
Yeah, and I'll be following your reports. And that is it for today's edition of Studio 2. Our show is produced by Debbie Builder and Andreas Copes. Al Banks is our engineer. Kevin McCrory is the executive producer. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philly, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk to you tomorrow.